Next case is 03-929, State of Ohio versus Kyle Martin. Mr. Abdallah.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Saleh Abdallah. I'm an assistant Cuyahoga County prosecutor on behalf of the state of Ohio. At the outset, I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Thank you. This matter is one concerning the Sixth Amendment constitutional right to counsel or to proceed without counsel. Specifically, the issue in this matter is whether, taken as a whole, the record in the state of Ohio versus Kyle Martin reflects that the defendant, in this case, proceeded with his eyes open. That is, did he know what was happening? Did he know that his rights to have his case litigated fully by counsel? And on the other hand, did he know that he had a right to proceed pro se without the absolute assistance of counsel? And the answer to those questions is yes, that the record does reflect that Mr. Martin's eyes were open. He had a full grasp of what was going on, and that the record also reflects him to be an articulate, sophisticated person with experience in criminal law, having 9 previous criminal convictions.
Counsel, doesn't the record also reflect that he made it pretty clear that he wanted to co-counsel the case from?
Well, that's correct, Your Honor, in that he did actually file a written motion for co-counsel. And I would argue that is exactly what he received throughout his trial, is the ability to co-counsel. He took on some core functions of the trial, as well as having counsel take on core functions of an attorney during that trial. We had a voir dire process, which was largely conducted by counsel. Counsel argued a Rule 29 motion. Counsel was at Mr. Martin's side and at his beck and call throughout the trial. And I think the record reflects clearly that Mr. Martin realized this and took advantage of counsel and their abilities throughout the trial. The key here, I think, is the taking a pragmatic approach and taking the record as a whole. Does the record as a whole tell us that if Mr. Martin's eyes or the appellee's eyes were open in this case with regards to the waiver of whatever counsel he waived? In this matter, what the state would argue is that he received exactly what he asked for, which is hybrid representation. And the cases have said, even in hybrid representation, we're still looking for some type of waiver because you are giving up some of your rights to have your trial conducted fully by experienced or by an attorney. And in this case, I think there is that waiver in that there are 5 motion hearings on the record that take up 112 pages of the transcript that the trial judge painstakingly went through with Mr. Martin as to what was going on, discussing motions with him, discussing co-counsel, motion of co-counsel. Mr. Martin, I understand my rights, that he wanted to participate actively. Page 21 and 22, I'm co-counsel. I should be able to file motions. Why should I have to wait on somebody when I could do it myself? He acknowledges that these are horrendous allegations. The judge in the July 5th, 2001 hearing tells him these are serious matters. You have serious charges, including conspiracy to commit aggravated murder, attempted murder, and kidnapping. Sounds like you want to be your own attorney. And the words he uses are very important, the judge, that is.
Well, but then, he did say that. Yes, he did. So it sounds like you want to be your own attorney, sir. Defendant, that's not what I'm asking the court. And then the court decided he was going to be his own attorney with a standby counsel. This is really a strange situation, isn't it?
But, Your Honor.
Unusual, I guess.
Unusual, but yes. look at the defendant's conduct, not what he's saying, because it's his conduct that the trial judge is also looking at. Because the trial judge's words are, okay, I'll permit you to be your own counsel, because that's what he's asking. He wants to be counsel.
At what point, though, did he ask for new counsel? He just couldn't get along with the present counsel, and then he asked for new counsel.
The new counsel, well, he asked for new counsel repeatedly throughout, except at the very end when the jury was ready to be seated, he pops up and says, I want new counsel. That's not somebody who thinks that they're there on their own, that they have no help, when he's asking for new counsel as opposed to counsel, period. I will permit you to be your own counsel is responsive to Mr. Martin's conduct.
Well, but he
that
says
he wants
again,
to be his
that
own
same,
counsel.
And that same discourse between the court and the defendant, is it your intention, Mr. Martin, then to act as your own lawyer? Defendant, no, it is not. But that's my intention to participate as to doing all that I can to protect my rights as a citizen. And then it goes on, after that, the judge says you're going to be your own lawyer with this standby counsel. It sounds as if he maybe didn't trust lawyers. Totally. And so he wanted to have some role, some part in his defense in this criminal trial. Isn't that what he's currently thinking?
That is correct. And it's important to note that that colloquy takes place July 9th at a motion hearing. The trial is not until July 30th. After that statement is made, I will permit you to be your own counsel, the judge goes back to him and says, listen, have you reconsidered? Here's what we can do. I can have counsel conduct a trial. You can ask questions. You can have the active participation that you want. Think about it. This takes
now,
place on.
Now, none of this was put in writing, was it?
Well, actually, he actually penned himself in his own words, in his own handwriting. A motion for co-counsel. It was put in writing by
him. I mean the fact that he wanted to represent himself, that was never put in writing.
At that time, no, but he did.
But later it was?
No, before. That motion was submitted from the get-go.
Oh,
I want to be co-counsel. I want to have active participation.
Oh, but he wanted to be co-counsel.
And that's what
he never once said that he wanted to be his own attorney.
He did, because when on the trial date, the judge asked him pointedly, how do you want to, okay, what's your pleasure? I've given you your right to be your own counsel. I've advised you against it. I've cautioned you against it. What do you want to do?
What did he say?
And he said that I am ready to proceed. He got up and he said, I am ready to proceed. And then he went into a whole litany about motions and dismissing the indictment, some type of pre-printed form. He got up and he said, I want to proceed.
And did he ever confer with these advisory attorneys?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the record is replete with instances in which both Mr. Standard from the Public Defender's Office and also Mr. Thompson from the Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office, both capable attorneys, replete throughout the record of his turning to them and asking for advice. The judge even points it out, let the record reflect in a number of instances that the defendant is conferring with counsel. Counsel approaches sidebar with the appellee in this case.
Did they ever participate in asking questions and anything like that?
They participated in his direct testimony in his case. They participated in the voir dire. They, in fact, not just participated, basically conducted the voir dire, a very important part of a trial.
Did they give final arguments, opening statements?
Opening statements were made by Mr. Martin. Closing statements were made by Mr. Martin, again, at his request. Rule 29 motion was made by the attorney, I believe Mr. Thompson. There is a motion to dismiss a count that was prepared by the public defenders. It was signed by Mr. Martin, but it was a typed, well-reasoned motion that actually prompted the state then to dismiss one of the indictments. And that was prepared, the record will reflect, by the by co-counsel, by Mr. Standard and Mr. Thompson in this case.
Did the court provide any Faretta warnings?
I'm sorry?
Did the court provide any Faretta warning?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The court indicated to him that, you know, he cautioned him against abandoning his counsel. He told him it was not a good idea that what he was doing. He told him that these are very serious charges. And again, he kept coming back, five different motion hearings. At each one, he would say, you know, and the record clearly reflects this, are you going to reconsider your decision? And the ultimate answer to that was Mr. Martin standing up and saying, I am ready to proceed. And he did proceed, again, in arguing motion. So Faretta is clearly covered in these.
But counsel, there's no written waiver in the record, correct?
There is, I would argue that the co-counsel motion, which was written and signed by the defendant, is ample to cover that criminal rule 44C requirement.
And when was that executed, before or after the judge's admonitions and discussions with the defendant here?
That was before.
Okay, so wouldn't it make sense that once the judge cautions a defendant, whomever that is, about the pitfalls of self-representation, discharge of attorneys, et cetera, then the seriousness is, then the waiver should be signed or a document signed acknowledging the intelligent and comprehensive understanding of what the judge has gone over, not in a motion, you know, scratching the surface, so to speak.
I understand, Your Honor, but I think the issue here is, were his eyes open? And the U.S. Supreme Court has taken a very pragmatic position with regards to this issue. There is no standard, delineated, formalistic way to go about this. The trial judge has to satisfy himself that this defendant knows what he's doing and knows that he's given up, not that he's actually a good attorney or can present his case well, but knows that he has the right to have counsel present his case.
But there is a rule that says you have to inform the counsel, I mean the defendant, that if he wants to not have an attorney, that he has to be in writing. Isn't that true?
There is that rule, Your Honor.
He wanted both ways, didn't he? He wanted to represent himself, and he wanted an attorney.
Exactly.
Can he have both ways?
Well, he actually did get it both ways. Even though he didn't have a right under either the Ohio Constitution or the United States Constitution to have hybrid representation, he actually was allowed to have hybrid representation. And now he complains about the fact that he was allowed to have this hybrid
representation. Well, I think the problem with the case is that the judge didn't have him sign a waiver of counsel to begin with, to make sure the record was clear that he understood that he was going to represent himself and the pitfalls of representing himself.
Except, Your Honor, in that case, he had counsel. He had counsel. It wasn't a case where you have a Johnson case at the U.S. Supreme Court.
He also conducted his own questioning and running the trial.
He conducted portions of his trial. That is correct. But he had counsel. Criminal Rule 44C goes to complete waiver of counsel, I would argue. So not to just certain parts of counsel.
So you say that doesn't apply in this case?
I would argue it does not apply in this case. Other Ohio courts, lower districts, have argued substantial compliance with current Rule 44C as well. You had counsel. He had two attorneys sitting by him. This is not a case where, as in Johnson, where an indictment happens on January 21st, a trial on January 23rd, and the person is sentenced on January 25th without any assistance of counsel. He had five lengthy motion hearings. And if we're talking written waiver as being sufficient, you go to Von Moltke. There was a written waiver in that case. That was a plea. The housewife who had never been in trouble before actually signed a written waiver. That wasn't sufficient. And I don't think we want to go down that road where we have a formalistic, you know, here's five things on this sheet of paper, sign it, and put it in a file. You have not waived your right to counsel. I think it's more important than just
isn't it required to have both inquiry by the court, satisfaction by the court, and then the allowance of the defendant to execute the written document as testimony to his understanding? One without the other is insufficient.
And that might be the case where you don't have the two attorneys sitting next to you. When you don't have a hybrid representation, I would argue, and the way the U.S. Supreme Court has taken it, where you have the we have counsel being waived on a post indictment statement, saying Miranda rights are okay to waive counsel in those cases, and I would argue that there is a method and a line that where it progressively it gets more rigid and more rigorous. And I would argue that that would be when you have no counsel at your side. And I would argue that the hybrid representation falls way short of that. That there is an opportunity, such as in this case, where you have two counsel that you've conferred with who have actively participated in your trial. How can you now come before the courts and say, I wasn't aware that I had a right to counsel? Well, I mean, you had them.
You've used your time, Mr. Abadal.
I'm sorry?
You've used your time.
Oh,
your red light
you.
Is on. That's what that means.
I apologize.
Ms. Roby.
Good morning. Mr. Martin was denied the assistance of counsel at trial. He proceeded through trial without the effective assistance of counsel as is required by the Sixth Amendment, and he did not waive his right to counsel.
We know that he did not sign a written waiver, but the prosecution argues that he did have assistance of counsel. You say he did not have the assistance of effective counsel. So is this case really a case about ineffective assistance of counsel?
Well,
or is it a case about no counsel? Because, I mean, some of the language of the court seems to be saying to him, well, you don't want a lawyer, I guess. But the prosecution argues that isn't the way it ended up. So is this a case about ineffective assistance of counsel, or is it a case about waiver?
Well, this is a case about the denial of the right to counsel. And the right to counsel is the effective assistance of counsel. And my point is that by providing standby counsel, you do not satisfy the constitutional right to counsel. That does not suffice. You cannot provide someone with a standby attorney in place.
What does that term mean as you use it? And what did it mean in terms of this trial? I mean, the word standby could imply that the lawyers are on deck, in the back of the room, in the hallway. But if they're sitting at counsel table and participating along with their client, that might not seem to be like an appropriate use of the term.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, they were sitting next to the defendant, but the court was, in fact, restricting their participation. When they jumped in to help him finish voir dire, Mr. Martin did start the voir dire on his own and was completely unable to do it, of course. The court then advised him, I'm going to allow you to have your attorneys ask the jury some questions for voir dire, but I'm not going to let them do this throughout trial. Later, Mr. Martin, after the voir dire, Mr. Martin questioned every witness on his own, did the trial on his own, The Rule 29, again, his lawyers were permitted to argue because, of course, Mr. Martin wouldn't know what a Rule 29 motion was. And then when Mr. Martin was on the stand, the court again granted permission to allow his counsel to participate. So in this case, it's not even what some courts have recognized as a hybrid, because Mr. Martin did not have the option of enlisting his counsel's help when he needed it. Now, if I can address this motion
for before you leave that, what do you mean by that?
What do I mean by?
That he did not have the right to use his counsel.
When he needed it, you said.
Well,
I had the same question, exactly.
The court told him, I'm going to allow your counsel to participate at this point, but not throughout the trial. The court had told Mr. Martin, you are going to represent yourself. I know you say you don't want to do it, but I know that's what you really mean. You really do mean you want to represent yourself, and you're going to.
But did the court prevent counsel, the so-called standby counsel, from negotiating with Mr. Martin how the standby counsel would help him? The court didn't put any restrictions on standby counsel, did it?
Well, the court informed Mr. Martin that he would not be permitted to use his counsel throughout the trial. And I think that we can reasonably infer that restricted him.
What did that mean? We don't know what that means, I guess.
Do we?
Practically, we don't know what that means.
But I think we do, because the judge did not allow counsel to question witnesses, and he didn't let him have it both ways, so to speak. He said, you want to represent yourself, and so you're not going to have these attorneys asking questions. You can't have it both ways. And looking at Rule 44, it says, after being fully advised of his right to assign counsel, knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily waives his right to counsel. I don't think there was a meeting of the minds of the defendant and the judge.
There certainly wasn't, Your Honor. In this case, Mr. Martin told the judge about a dozen times, I do not want to represent myself. I do not want to go pro se. I need an attorney.
We don't have any in serious offenses. We're supposed to have a written waiver.
Correct.
And
there's no written waiver. There were no Faretta warnings. Even the written motion for co-counsel that the state has referred to as being as requesting self-representation, the text of that notice of respective defense, as it was titled, was, now comes the defendant, Kyle Martin, who gives the court notice there will be a respective relationship between defense counsel and defendant in the defense case. Mr. Martin never said, I want to question witnesses. Mr. Martin never said, I want to be permitted to do openings and closings at my trial. I believe that Mr. Martin, although it was not fully fleshed out by any questions by the court, I believe that Mr. Martin just wanted to be permitted to file these pro se motions that he had been filing. And it's not unusual, and for some reason, this notice of respective defense seems to rub the judge the wrong way.
Counsel, from where we're sitting, it sounds an awful lot like to properly decide this case, we're going to have to crawl through the whole record because there seems to be a dispute, almost an evidentiary dispute, about exactly what role did counsel play from start to finish, at various motions and throughout the trial. It doesn't sound like the two of you are in agreement as to what actually took place, or what the meaning, certainly not what the import was of what took place. So let me take you back to the Court of Appeals. It strikes me that the Court of Appeals really ended up deciding this on some comments of the trial judge and the absence of a written waiver. Is that turned the whole case for them, or am I mistaken about what turned the case for them?
The Court of Appeals took a look at the hearing in which the judge told the defendant he was representing himself. In that hearing, the court did nothing in the way of approximating a Feretta instruction, did not do a penetrating and comprehensive examination as von Moltke requires. And von Moltke is pretty explicit.
But that was one hearing of many, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so they seized on what the judge said in that hearing and then and said, well, the judge is telling him he's on his own and there's no written waiver. Isn't that how they decided this case?
There was not any sort of Feretta warning given in other hearings either, Your Honor. In the first hearing, in the context of a speedy trial waiver that the defendant did not want to execute, the judge said, this is a serious case. You're facing serious charges. And at that, and that was in the context of, you know, sir, you may want to consider giving your attorney more time to prepare this case. This had nothing to do with right to counsel. This was a very brief discussion, very surface, touching on the fact that this was a serious case. It was on July 20th, 10 days before trial, that the judge said, you are going to represent yourself. There were no actions by Mr. Martin which should have led to an implied waiver of counsel, and there were no actions by Mr. Martin which could be construed as a voluntary waiver of counsel. Because at
counsel,
that hearing,
what situation, you know, the judge finds himself with a defendant and a team of attorneys, and the defendant wants a hybrid type of relationship here. Now, you're saying that he only wanted to be able to file his own motions. Do you mean in addition to motions that his team of attorneys would have prepared?
Well, that's what was going on. And that's my understanding of this, because he never said he wanted to stand up at trial and conduct parts
of the
trial.
Okay, all right. What happens, though, when we have a defendant who wants to participate by questioning and would insist on questioning defendants, but also wanted to do that selectively? You would agree that's permissible?
Well, Your Honor, the defendant does not have a constitutional right to a hybrid form of representation, but a court can allow it. It would certainly be permissible if a defendant clearly stated his desire to actively conduct parts of his trial, then the judge would be required to get a waiver of counsel in writing after going through the Feretta inquiry, because you need to waive your right to counsel in order to engage in this hybrid.
But not a standard waiver of counsel. We're talking about several different things here. A selective waiver of counsel as opposed to a total waiver of a counsel as opposed to acceptance of counsel in a standby capacity?
Your Honor, I believe that a waiver of your right to counsel, a full, valid, complete waiver, is required before allowing a defendant to engage in hybrid representation. The courts of Ohio have not, to my knowledge, addressed this issue. The Sixth Circuit has in Wilson versus Hurt, and their logic simply was that because you cannot force a defendant to take on certain core parts of his trial, for instance, if a defense attorney shows up and says, okay, I'm pretty much ready, but you're going to do the opening, this is not effective assistance of counsel, and the defendant's rights to counsel would be violated. Because you cannot put that on the defendant, in order to allow a defendant to have a hybrid form of representation at trial, you would need to get a valid waiver of counsel. And this means all of the warnings of the dangers and the von Moltke list of considerations that the trial court has a duty to discuss with the defendant, and then a written waiver per 44C.
I wanted to follow up on that question, because one of the reasons I voted to allow this case review in the merits is because I thought it might give us an opportunity to write on the hybrid representation, which we haven't done. As you indicated, the circuits, our federal circuits, seem to be somewhat split. Sixth Circuit, we do have the Wilson opinion. Do you think this case offers us the opportunity to write, to set a standard for for hybrid representation, or is this, if it isn't, it seems to me we're dealing with error correction.
Well, what occurred at trial here was quite similar, if not actually a form of hybrid representation. And the fact that that Mr. Martin proceeded through trial with this hybrid representation, despite the fact that he did not waive his right to counsel, is a violation.
In the cases that have set a standard for hybrid representation, is there an express waiver of counsel and all? Is that one of the requirements as you read them? In Wilson, was there a waiver?
In Wilson, the court did review, the court did say absolutely you need a waiver of counsel before you can engage in hybrid representation. And in Wilson, the court did something of a survey of other circuits. And in fact, the circuits were pretty much in agreement with Wilson that you have to have a full waiver of counsel. However, they noted there were a few opinions that indicated that some slim forms of hybrid representation could take place without a full waiver, and those were merely allowing the defendant to, for instance, testify over the objections of his counsel, or allowing the defendant to ask a few questions
after
his counsel.
Very limited participation by the defendant.
Exactly. Just a little bit of participation may be permitted without a full waiver. And in my experience, it's my understanding that my client has the right to override my recommendations in any case. So I did not see a problem with not needing a waiver of counsel in order to, for instance, have my client say, I'm going to testify over your advice. In this case, Mr. Martin did not get what he asked for. He asked to have some control, and he wanted some input into how his defense was going to be conducted. He never said he wanted to conduct his trial. He never said he wished to waive his right to counsel. In fact, he clearly invoked his right to counsel, yet was forced to proceed without the effective assistance of counsel at trial. Are there any further questions? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Roby. Mr. Abadala, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I apologize for running over my time. The Wilson v. Hurt is exactly what happened in this instance, and I think it is a good opportunity to address the hybrid representation issue, because it happens frequently, and frequently the trial judge is left in a quandary what to do in this type of situation. And and they did say that there should be Faretta warnings, but those warnings are no formality required, searching inquiry into defendant's knowledge. And so there's no really formality with regards to the Faretta rights.
How much, if we were writing a rule of law on this standard, how much discretion should be given to the defendant or how much responsibility, I guess it would be, should we expect the defendant to have in deciding whether he or she wants hybrid representation if it's explained to them? Is that a decision that would be ultimately made by the trial court, or can the defendant, after being given all the proper instructions, do that himself or herself, in your view?
Well, I think, I mean, the problem is with the full waiver of counsel is it's not a full waiver of counsel. So I think, to answer your question, I think you do leave it up to the defendant to decide what the relationship is going to be. But to have him then execute a written waiver of entire counsel just flies in the face of what's going on.
Well, Ms. Roby says that I haven't had a chance yet to read the circuit cases, which I'll do, but she says that the cases say that there has to be a waiver first, and then the court, I guess, somehow creates this hybrid representation.
Well, that's correct, but the waiver that the Wilson court talks about is what happened in this case.
It's a different form of waiver.
Yeah, you just try to dissuade him from doing that. You tell him it's a very important case. These are learned counsel. That type of waiver, making sure that he understands he doesn't have to do this, that he doesn't have to do opening statements, or he doesn't have to.
But there wasn't really any waiver here, was there? Because he said he wasn't waiving.
He did. When he said, I wish to proceed, he meant, I wish to proceed. I wish to go on and present his case. I mean, it's his words. Now, the words of the trial court happened 3 motion hearings before that. He says, I wish to proceed. And when he does that, he means, I wish to proceed and take active participation and conduct a trial as he conducted them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.